You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Topic is a little bit off the beaten track. It's actually a sugya. Sugya half halachic, half hashkafic. Is there indeed a power that one Jew has to curse another Jew? We know that there's a pasuk by Bilam, where Balak at least is quoted to say, I don't know if it's true, but Balak assumes that it's true. That you have the power to give bracha and you have the power to give klala. That's at least true by Bilam. Maybe that's unique koch that Bilam has. By Avraham Avinu we have mevaracha mevarach, yevaracha mevarach. That means, actually that's the opposite. That's people have the ability to give you a bracha. So the question is, do Jews have the ability to give other Jews a klala? Do we ever have to be scared of somebody cursing us? I don't mean with four-letter words. We mean with Hashem should, whatever, the person. So is there such an ability? Is it okay to do that under certain circumstances? And that's what we'll try to figure out this evening. So we have a few psukim. Now, I didn't exhaust all of them, but there's a pasuk in Mishpatim. Hello. How do you say that first word?
Elohim.
Elohim lo sekalel. Elohim means? Judges, the Beis Din, lo sekalel, you cannot curse. V'nasiva amcha lo sa'ar, and you're not allowed to curse. Aleph Reish Hei is a shorish, just like Kuf Lam Lam, Lam, and all to mean curse. There's an issa d'oraisa to curse a judge and to curse a nasi. And furthermore, in Vayikra, Parshas Kadosh, lo sekalel chayresh. And that's the most interesting of them all. Because what's the funny thing about cursing a chayresh? He doesn't hear it anyway. So that's sort of funny. Yet the Torah still answers that. So the Rambam is going to go to town on that. We'll see later why that is so important. But what we do have here is all the Moni HaMitzvahs do count it as an Issa D'oraisa to curse any fellow Jew. Either, the way they assume is if you can't curse a Cheresh, certainly you can't curse a regular person who could hear it. So therefore there's going to be an Issa D'oraisa to curse any Jew. Let us begin the Sugya with the Gemara Megillah Daf Tesvav, with a fascinating insight that the Rashba offers to it. Because the line that I underline is the line you're familiar with, the explanation of the Rashba is against what you always assume. Let's see an insight. Om Rebbe Lazar Om Bichanina, there's Megillah Daf Tesvav Amud Aleph. Famous line, La'olam alti birchas hedyot, kalabeinacha. You shouldn't take people lightly, even a hedyot, even a plebeian, somebody who is unimportant, if he gives you a bracha, don't take it lightly. And the Gemara gives proofs. Sharei shnei gedolei hadar baruchom shnei hadyotos. Two plebeians gave a bracha to two great people, and guess what? The bracha of the plebeian v'niskaimabahen was fulfilled. Ve'elohein David v'Daniel. Let's see the two instances. David de barchei aravna, arona, different ways to pronounce his name. It appears different ways in different places in Tanakh. That's Arona Hayavusi, the person who owned Yerushalayim before David purchased it. He gave David, he was not even a Jewish, he was a Yavusi. And he gave a bracha to David, and it was Niskayim. Similarly, Daniel, to Barchei Dayavesh. Ah, we know Dayavesh. Dayavesh is the grand son of Esther Hamalka. He was the father of Koresh. Father of Koresh, who allowed the Jews to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash. And he was certainly not Jewish, he was Babylonian. And he gave a bracha to Daniel. Pasuk says, Elokach, this is what the bracha of the non-Jew Dayavish is saying, Elokach, the ant palach leba tadira, the God that you palach, bow down to, you serve regularly, hu yeshazivnach, he should save you. Anyone know what that pasuk is referring to? You all know the story. What? That's right, from the lion's den, right? Daniel begov harayos, but before he was thrown in, Dayavish's arm was twisted behind his back by his ministers, that he had no choice but to throw Daniel, his faithful friend and minister Daniel. The king had no choice but to throw him into the lion's den. It was some politics that made that happen. And before Daniel is thrown in, Dayavish, who is responsible for throwing him in, but says, I will give you the bracha, you should be saved. The same God that you pray to, and indeed it worked. So you see that a hedyot gives a bracha even to a gadol hadar, it works. So don't take brachas lightly. Now we have the flip side. Same man to Amar Rav Elazar Rav Chanina, alti kilas hedyot kalabeinacha. If a plebeian gives a person, God forbid, a klala, we can't take that lightly either. Why? Where do we see? And this is a fascinating insight on how to read the pasuk. We know the story with Avimelech when he kidnapped Sarah. He thought that Sarah and Avram were really siblings, not spouses. So at the end, he was forced to pay what the pasuk describes as a ksus einayim, which a lot of the most of the mafarshim say, you know, sort of like a payment to, you know, make nobody think that he was in control, but rather she was in charge, and therefore he had to pay her to get out of it clean. Avimelech kilal es Sarah, he cursed her by saying hinelach ksus einayim. The Gemara understands this ksus einayim to be a curse. Your eyes will be covered over. V'niskayim v'zara. And indeed, Sarah's son, when he was elderly, Hitaka wasn't able to, his eyes were covered over. His eyes were dimmed, his eyes were covered over. That's the Gemara. You're familiar with the idea of Alti Birchas Hedyot Kala Be'enecha. We are now going to rock the boat. What does it mean? And the question that the Rashba says, sets up, is a very simple question. Why do Hitaka, yes, take seriously the bracha if he's only a Hedyot? Or even more seriously, if the person is a hedyot, why should I be worried about their klala? If they're nobody, then why should I be concerned? Okay, bracha, you want to say I can take it seriously, fine. But why a klala? Says the Shas HaTshuvas HaRash B'chelek Hey, Siman Nun, that which it says in the Gemara and Megillah that you should take their bracha seriously, imhu hedyot kishamo, like it sounds like, gam klala so gam berchaso, what does it do? What does it care? What do I care if he's a brach or a klal? It's from a hedyot. Says the Rashba, a fundamental idea. What does the word hedyot mean? Says the Rashba, the word hedyot should not be translated like I did 3 minutes ago. It doesn't mean plebeian. You know what hedyot means? Hedyot is relativistic. Meaning? It's only, right, a kohen hedyot doesn't mean a stupid or a plebeian kohen. Well, it doesn't mean plebeian. It means anything as opposed to something else that's greater. And therefore, you could have, relativistic means, it doesn't mean anything, it just depends on who else is there. A kohen hedyot doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with him, it just means compared to a kohen gadol, he's less than a kohen gadol. And therefore, the Rashba says, David HaMelech, if he would, David HaMelech is a kohen Yisrael or a Levi. David HaMelech is from Shevet Yehuda, he's Yisrael. If he'd walk into the Beis HaMikdash and want to do Avodah, David HaMelech, author of Tehillim, he walks into the Beis HaMikdash, they would call him a Hedyot. Not because he's stupid, not because he's a plebeian, his mouth is Yisrael. But in regards to the activities they have to take care of, which is the Avodah, the Beis HaMikdash, he is not significant compared to the role of the regular Kohanim, you know, the 14-year-old, you know, guy, kids with the last name Kohn, running around. Similarly, look what I underlined. With any time you see the word hedyot, that's what it means. Kol Yisrael kehedyotos lifnei melech. What does the Rashba mean with those five words? You know what it means when the Gemara said, Al tihi birchas hedyot kala be'enecha? Who's a hedyot? Well, who's the source of all bracha? Hashem. So compared to Hashem, every last Jew, be he Reb Chaim Kanievsky or the dodo head, you know, schnooky kid who sleeps through morning Seder, they're all hedyotos compared to the Ribono Shel Olam. So in other words, there is no Gemara that says that if a lowly person gives you a bracha, oh, take it seriously. If a lowly person gives you a klala, oh, take it seriously. Because here we're not talking about a lowly person. The word hedyot is defined as, says the Rashba,
any person.
A human being. Because well, compared to a Kodesh Baruch Hu,
the cases with the hedyotim were, you know, not in worst cases, why do you have to go that far to find Avimelech and other people? And you know, the Hedyot is that we have to look around.
I guess the Gemara wants to show that even if it's a non-Jew, Klap Yakodesh Baruch Hu, it's called a hedyot. I'm also bothered by your question a little bit. But even though it's a human being, even a non-Jew, you see that compared to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a hedyot, it just means a person. Doesn't necessarily mean that a Rav Nahayavusi or that the Yavish were lowly people per se. That could be. So therefore us, compared to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, would be hedyotos. So therefore when somebody, you know, sometimes people in their humility, somebody says, you know, I want to give you a bracha, you know, even if I'm only a hedyot, still in that feigned humility that people often do, we see from here that that's not going to crack it, because hediot here doesn't mean you're lowly, doesn't mean you're anything bad, it just means you're not a Kodesh Baruch Hu. We're all not a Kodesh Baruch Hu. We're all hediotos. And therefore the Gemara is saying, if a fellow Jew gives you a bracha, take it seriously. And to the contrary, if God forbid a fellow Jew gives you a klala, also it needs to be taken seriously. That's how the Rashba reads this Gemara. So we have what seems to be an explicit Gemara that if a Jew curses another Jew, it sounds here even if a non-Jew curses somebody, there is what to be concerned about. It's an explicit Gemara in Megillah. And what we have to figure out is how and why should that be, could that be? We'll just say one more Gemara that you're familiar with, and then we'll try to figure out how it works and why it works and how much should it work. And this is a story that we're all familiar with, the Gemara Makkos Yud Aleph. There, the Mishnah talks about which Kohen Gadol has to die. There are different kinds of Kohen Gadol. There's a Kohen Gadol, there's a Skan Kohen Gadol, there's Meshuach Mechama. Which one of those Kohen Gadols has to die in order to enable the Rotzeach, the Shogeg, to go free? And in that context, the Mishnah tells us, Mishnah in Makkos Yud Aleph, Lefikach, because the freedom of the Rotzeach B'Shkagos who are in the Yermiklat are dependent on the death of the Kohen Gadol, Yimoseyan Shel Kohanim, the mothers of the Kohanim used to send doggy bags, used to send, you know, fruit platters, care packages, thank you. Misapkos Lahem Michya Uchsus, they would send into the jails, into the Yermiklat, food, snacks, clothing, Kadesha Lo Yispalu Al B'neim She'amusu, so that the people in the city, so the Rotzeach B'Shkagos shouldn't daven that the Kohen Gadol should die, because if that's your ticket to freedom, you might do it. You might daven that they should die. Asks the Gemara a very pointed question. Taima makes a diak. Taima, the reason why they won't die, the Kohen Gadol won't die, is D'lo Matzlu. Because if you get the inhabitants not to daven, then the Kohen Gadol won't die. Hamatzlu, but if the people and the inhabitants of the Yermiklat would daven, what does it sound like?
It would work.
In other words, you have this Rotzeach. And he davens that a Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Gadol, the Shnechnas Lifnei V'Lifnim, should die. Guess what? Hashem's going to listen to that Rotzeach B'Shogeg.
That's what the Kohen Gadol was found, that the Rotzeach B'Shogeg shouldn't accept the Tfilis. Because the Tfilis, a serious Tfilis, can work its way through.
Okay. Okay, so that's pretty scary that a fellow Jew could daven, that even a lowly Jew, presumably somebody who's a chayev, and he therefore was Hashem arranged that he should be a rotzeach b'shogeg, megalgal chayev chilai de chayev, and still he could daven, it will be effective that the Kohen Gadol should die, the great Kohen Gadol should die. Asks the Gemara, how could that be? V'haksiv kitzipor lanud kedror la'uf ken kilas chinam lo savo. Just like a bird flies away, it doesn't stay anywhere, it's not permanent, so too the klala, for no reason, a kilalas chinam, an unworthy curse, doesn't come. It just flies away. What is the Gemara saying? That we shouldn't care about that prayer, that tefillah of the people in the Yermiklat, because it's a meaningless tefillah, and therefore it should be... They didn't do it. The Kohen Gadol didn't do anything wrong, so why should he be punished? That's the Gemara's question. Answer the Gemara, the Kohen Gadol did do something wrong, and therefore the tefillah against him does have validity. What did the Kohen Gadol do wrong? Bipirkei de Rava Shmueli, I heard from the shir that Rava used to give, third line of the Gemara Makkos, Shehayo lahem levakesh rachem al doron velo bikshu. The Kohen Gadol should have davened that the people in his generation, nobody should die, even b'shogeg, nobody should die, and since somebody died, it must be the Kohen Gadol didn't daven well enough. And therefore we hold the Kohen Gadol accountable on some level. He has some level of guilt, and therefore, if that dodo head Rotzeach B'Shogeg davens that the Kohen Gadol should die, there's epis vas. There's something to click in. There's something wrong.
It's based upon the Kohen Gadol not being followed. It's all a tefillah.
Oh, you're saying it's all a lack of... You're saying that his tefillah is tacking on to the lack of the Kohen Gadol's tefillah. But it was a lack. It wasn't latching. It was.
This guy's going to be responsible seriously. The Kohen Gadol didn't do his full job, apparently, the Gemara tells us, so they put his failure in tefillah.
Okay, so this failure in tefillah, you see that if there is reason for curse, what we see from this Gemara, at least the conclusion of the Gemara, that in order for the curse to be effective, there has to be at least some grounds for the curse. I was once in a place, I can't give any details, I was once in a place where there was a guy who was a little cuckoo. The guy was a little cuckoo, was a little off. And he told me he was angry at the world. And he said, so-and-so, you know, didn't treat me nicely, so I davened that he should die. And he tells the people to their face, no, I'm going to daven that you should die because you didn't treat me nice, whatever. He's a little bit off. And I was always nervous, like, you know, when I knew him for a bunch of years, like, at first I was like, wow, that's a little bit scary. Then as I get older, I realize this guy's a nut job. I couldn't care less what, you know, what he thinks. It doesn't really bother. So we see from here that maybe if it's a klala that's chinam, then you don't have to be worried. It just flies away like a bird, like the pasuk says. But if there is something that if he's hitting on something, you know, if he's a little bit off, but he is a little bit on, and he's hitting on something there that's, you know, maybe the guy did, you know, ba'avel him or did something mean to him that wasn't as nice to him, maybe there is room, maybe such a klala might be effective in that case. Says the Gemara continues right before the italicized lines, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Kilas Chacham, oh boy. If you have a klala from a Chacham, then it's a whole different level. Even though we just explained a moment ago that klala of a regular person will only work if there's grounds for the klala. However, if it's a klala of a Chacham, that will be effective even if there are no grounds for the klala. Where do we know this? Machitofa. This is a story that does not appear explicitly in the Nevi'im, although the Gemara paints the picture of what the Pesukim are describing. David HaMelech dug a foundation, thank you, for either the Mizbeach or part of the Beis HaMikdash, and at some point he hit water, and the water started, right, in the spirit of Houston, we should all have in mind in our tefillahs, the people in Houston, the waters of the depths start sprouting up, and there's about to flood the whole who knows what, and David HaMelech said, oh my gosh, I want to know, do I have the permission to take Shem Hashem, write it on a piece of clay, and throw it into the water to make the waters recede? Somehow David knew that would work, that would make the waters recede. But he didn't know, am I allowed to do that, because I'm writing Shem Hashem Levatala, and comes Achitofel, and he says, if anybody knows the answer and doesn't give me the answer, he should die. He should die, he should choke. So Achitofel, who was a gigantic Talmud Chacham, made the following Kav HaChomer. If you're allowed to write Hashem and destroy it for Sota, to bring Shalom, Ben Ish Leishto, the extent that you're allowed to go, do you allow to, David HaMelech didn't know if he was allowed to do this, to save thousands of people. And he says, hey, it's something, meaning that means it's so terrible to write, to erase Shem Hashem. And yet, you're allowed to do erase Shem Hashem to achieve shalom between a husband and a wife, between two people. So if you're allowed to do that, certainly if it's to save, to the next page, to save the world from drowning, certainly you're allowed to. And therefore, it must be motzi based on that kal v'chomer. Okay, so David HaMelech took Shem Hashem, threw it down, and saved the world, saved whatever Yerushalayim. What happened? Achitofel goes on his way home and chokes to death. Wait a second. What did David HaMelech say? David HaMelech says, if somebody knows the answer and doesn't tell me, that person should choke to death. Achitofel knew the answer, but did tell him and said, yeah, told him this Kal V'chomer and indicated that it should be mutter, and gave him the rationale why it should be mutter, and still, Achitofel choked to death. What do you see from this? You see that the klal of a Chacham, of a David HaMelech, is effective even if? Even if the condition isn't met, even if there's no real reason, as the Gemara says, Bechinam. I don't want to say the condition is met, because that's the next words. The Gemara continues and says, Kilas Chacham Afila Tanai Hiba. Even if you make a condition and the condition isn't met, even then the klala could come, God forbid. So we don't have to go into the story there, but again, you see how powerful this concept of klala is, at least if there's any grounds from a regular person, or from a Chacham, even if there are no grounds. This klala could, in this case, we see, kill a person. So we have numerous, we have a few Gemara, we have two Gemaras here. Gemara Megillah about Birchas Kilas Hedyot should not be light in your eyes. And here we have stories, as long as there's some grounds, the Kilala will be effective. If Tal Chacham, it's even effective without grounds. So let's try to understand, that was all the introduction. Let's now try to understand why a Kilala should work and how a Kilala should work. And we're going to see absolutely divergent perspectives, absolutely opposite perspectives of how, if, how, and why a Kilala could or should work. I'd like to learn with you
a
Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam. This Sefer HaMitzvahs is enough to give a Shiran for certainly a Drasha, if not a Shiran, just the Sefer HaMitzvahs, and we could stop just with the Sefer HaMitzvahs. Why? Because the message in the Sefer HaMitzvahs is so powerful that it should change the way we think about so many aspects of our life. And it will also tell us how Klala works in our discussion. The Rambam is going to highlight the fact that how does the Torah articulate the Isser of Klala? Specifically directed, a Klala directed at a Cheresh, which as we point out is the weirdest thing, because he's the one guy who doesn't hear a word you're saying, and still it's going to be also to curse him. Let's learn the Rambam together. Sefer HaMitzvahs, Shnei Zayin. Source number 6. Hiziranu. The Torah warns us, prohibits us, milakalel, eze isha yemi Israel. Any person, any Jew, v'husha amru, as the Pasuk says, excuse me, lo sekalel chayresh, can't curse a chayresh, deaf person. Now the Rambam says, why chayresh? The Rambam now sets down an incredible yesod. He says, there are different kinds of people in the world. When people are hurt, they want to get vengeance, they want to seek revenge. And you know what? The amount of revenge that they want to seek is proportional to their nature, the kind of person that they are, and the extent to which they were hurt or perceived as being hurt. Look at the Rambam's words. Amru cheresh. Why did the Torah say cheresh? Second line, listen to this. Ki hanefesh, a person, a soul, kishehisno eya, when he starts boiling up, when he becomes moved, linkom min hamazik, to avenge somebody who damaged him, Tigmal will respond in kind lamazik, parallel to the amount that he assumes that he was hurt. Lefit Surah says, according to the amount that he was damaged, Harashuma, that's indicated bidimyon in his imagination. Right? Really, nobody else hurts us. Whatever we're hurt, it comes from a Kadosh Baruch, it doesn't come from another person. But in our minds, we imagine that so-and-so hurt us, so-and-so damaged us, so-and-so damaged us, hurt our image, whatever it is. And therefore, as much as we assume, perceive, we heard, kasher shalom alo gemul, and when I pay him back, then that boiling that's within me calms down. That's how human beings work. We get excited about something. When I eke out vengeance, after that vengeance, I calm down. Now, how does it work? How much do I have to do? Depends. Second parent, pa'amim. Tishalmeu gumol, sometimes you could just curse somebody out, biklala v'chirufin, and call them names, levad, that's enough. And that calms you. You got it out of your system, you feel good. Pa'amim, after the three dots, yeha inyan yoser kash, it's more severe. And you don't calm down, v'lo tanuach, you're not at rest, acha ta'avideu komamono. When I make him lose money, I get him back. He caused me a loss of money, he did this to me, I'm going to make him lose money. Then you calm down, v'oz tanuach. Upa Amim, says the Rambam. It's even worse than that. Yehanin Yoser Kasha, Velo Tanuach Adshanis Tinakem Mimeno Begufo, until he has physical pain. Bimine HaKos, he gets hit, Vichisorn HaEvarim, he has to lose a limb. Oh, once I cut off his, I chop off his nose, I cut off a toe, he loses a hand, then I'm calmed down. And sometimes my anger, my vengeance is so great, Pamim Yehanin Yoser Kasha, Velo Tanuach Atnuah Hayi, that bubbling within me doesn't settle. Ad shetikach nefesh hamasik, until I just eliminate that fellow, until I kill that guy, and until I kill him, I will not be calm. Once I kill him, I relax. I feel I've avenged whatever I was trying to protect.
You are listening now, to BensTorah.com.
Sometimes, says the Rambam, there's less than killing, less than injuring and maiming, less than causing financial loss, less than cursing somebody out, there's something even less than that. Sometimes you just need to let it out of your system. You just need to talk. Even if, let's see what the Rambam says. Pa'amim, Tiatnuas hanefesh katana. Sometimes that boiling within us, that movement, that inner movement in our inner souls, is so little. Levakoshes onesh amazit, to seek out the punishment, to seek out that revenge. Vezeh either, it could be lekatnuas avono. He didn't do something so terrible. That I will be satisfied at shetanuach hatnuah hahi, that inner boiling within me will be satisfied as long as I could scream at him. B'tzakos, v'gazmo alav, in my maybe threats, I don't know if that word means threats, I'm not sure what that word means. V'kolulu oso, and in cursing him, afal pishlo yishma oso, even though that fellow who I'm screaming at doesn't hear me. V'lo yebemaimon hahi. Right, sometimes you get swindled by somebody and you say, that ganav, he's not here. You didn't hurt him. But once you said, that ganav, that already makes you feel. I had a situation over the past week. Somebody did repairs for somebody else. They put an installed air conditioning, installed some air conditioning, heating units or something, and the person paid up front. And they installed all the units, and some of the work wasn't yet finished. But they already paid once the installation happened, even though there was stuff that work that had to be done. They called and they called and they called 100 times, and the person would never pick up the phone. They got somebody else to call. It was me. They got somebody else to call. I called this installation person, and I said, "Hello, are you so and so?" He said, "What do you want?" I said, "I'm calling about, sorry, can't talk." Hung up. I told this to the person who had this installation, what happened, and the guy said, "Such a ganav." Made him feel better. He said those words, "Such a ganav." The ganav didn't hear it. The installer guy who didn't finish his job didn't hear it. But you say, you get it out of your system, you feel good. That's the point. That's the point. Right before, again, after the small underlined line, first one line, Vizel mefursam, this is common. Who are the kind of people who just lash out like that, even if there's no one to listen? Somebody who has a problem with what?
Anger.
Exactly, that's a psychologist here. Vizel mefursam, this is common. Mipol as an action or reaction of Baalei Hachema v'Hakas. That's a reaction of anger. You just need to get it out. Shehem, that these people who have anger issues, tanuach nafsham, they will settle down, b'zeh hashir, with this reaction, me'achatam ha'kalamot, things that are small, they still need to, even if the guy is not, v'afal pishiyeh ha'chote bilti yodeya, the person, the bad guy, the person that they assume hurt them, doesn't even know about it, and they don't even hear about it, you still need to say something. Now, when that installer was called a ganav. The installer, who lets he is a ganav, didn't hear it, wasn't hurt by it. So what would be the problem? Why can't I curse somebody if they don't hear anything and they're not hurt by it? What's the only way to understand?
Kosh Baruch Hu.
Apparently, the curse had some effect.
No, it's
there is some effect regardless.
The Rambam seems to be saying the exact opposite of that, Mr. Seligson. The Rambam's saying, there's no effect, there's nothing hurt, all you're doing is getting it out of your system, and that's a bad midos. In other words, what's the problem? The problem is not that you're hurting anybody else at all. It's that you, the cursor, are demonstrating bad midos. You are having the midah of kaas. And that, is this the most brilliant, brilliant vart of the Rambam? The Rambam is saying, that's what's licked, that's what's here hidden in this pearl, that's the pearl that's hidden here in this pasuk of Lo Sekalel Chayresh. Why does the Torah say Lo Sekalel Chayresh? To teach you that there's nothing happening to the guy. And still Hashem says, I don't want you to do it because I don't want you to have the midah of kaas. I don't need to respond. Give me three lines. Daniel.
It's not a mida, it's an illness.
Okay. Yes. Sometimes that, yes.
And it needs to be treated.
Right. 100%. 100%. Says the Rambam, let's look at the underlying lines. Here he sums it all up together. I might have thought that, what should the Yisr of Klala be? You're hurting somebody. You make somebody feel bad. Right, you're cursing them out. Says the Rambam, no. Ilu haya ola b'machshav teinu, if we would have thought, ki tachlis, that the reason, mashanesa kilas ish, כשיש עומי עושה, למשס ייגהו מן הצו הכאב, if somebody would hear it, and he would be hurt by it, he would be offended by it, he would be pained by what he hears, you're calling me names, you're calling me, you're making me feel bad, you're embarrassing me. אבל כילס חירש, אחר שלא ישמע, this deaf person is not hearing any of it. ושלא יחב בו, he's not hurt by it. שלא יחוטה בזה, so I might think that that's not a sin for me to expel words from my mouth, bad-mouthing somebody who's not going to hear it anyway. I'm not hurting him. Hine hodienu shehu asa, the Torah says, even there, you should know, that's asur. Asa daraisa, this is the punchline. Ki ha-Torah lo hikpida b'inyan ha-mekulal, the Torah here is not concerned with the sake of the, what's mekulal?
One who's cursed.
The one who is cursed. Aval hikpida b'inyan ha-mekalel. This pasuk is telling us that who has to, that the Isser is because of the Mekalel's midos.
So how do you answer?
There are five more words. Shelo yania nafshel and akama, that a person should be pulled to vengeance. Velo yagila lechos, and he shouldn't be pulled to anger. How do you? Okay, so if we have good midos, if we have good midos, and we don't want to be avenge, and we don't want to be koes, so how in the world could the Torah say you kill? You kill somebody. That's a fabulous question. How could, if the Torah is so concerned, I shouldn't even say something that doesn't hurt anybody, because I have to control my midos, I shouldn't have kas, I shouldn't even have that mid of kas that could even just, without hurting somebody. Certainly if it's a kas that hurts somebody. Or that. But here it doesn't hurt somebody. Even the mid itself is deadly. And Asur Daraisa, the Rambam is telling us. You're asking here, it's not just a bad midah of vengeance, it's mamash taking guy's life for it.
But a life is
what?
Taken. No, this isn't
Mr. Salik, you see what they're answering you? I didn't. It wasn't my answer, but you have two answers. They're saying the same thing. Mr. Bergman, Mr. Isaac are both saying that maybe the Gol Hadam's heter mitzvah, whatever it is, that which the Gol Hadam could kill, is not emanating from kaas or from vengeance. And proof in the pudding is that if there's no Gol Hadam, the Bez Din appoints a Gol Hadam. That means that the Gol Hadam is a force that should be there. And therefore, if the person doesn't know there is no Gol Hadam, then Hashem wants. The Bez Din will make sure there will be a Gol Hadam. So you see from that maybe Gol Hadam is not necessarily motivated by anger. It's just Hashem wants that this person should be.
Gol Hadam is a response of some sort that seems to be legitimized. That's my problem. Fine, you want to tell me the Rambam Gavali, you're not allowed, it's illegitimate to have any fears, any feelings of anger. Get it. But in this case of the Gol Hadam, you're legitimizing these feelings of revenge, which seems to be in complete contradiction to the Rambam.
Yeah, you're asking a good question.
I just don't.
It's a great question. I mean, you could add. It's also against Lasikom, the Isser Daraisa of Nekama in general. That's true, has financial components.
The funny thing is that the Gol Hadam is also a Kohen Gadol issue where Marmokum over here, that the Kohen Gadol didn't daven enough.
Right.
And in that case of Makkos.
Okay. Yeah, your question's a good question. I don't have a great answer for you.
The Rabbi says that the person was narrow. It's the best thing to point someone to the Gol Hadam.
But the way he's saying it much more nuanced. He's saying it in a very nuanced way. He's saying that the fact that the Torah allows that, the Torah is legitimate. I mean, you're right.
Sanctioning.
It's not the Torah, because it has to get out of the system. Because the Nerah has to be somehow avenged. So first it starts with the family. If not, then Bezdin has to do it with himself.
Okay. I hear. It's a good question. It's a good question.
It could be a check and balances to keep this guy in Ari Miklot.
You're saying it's just a way to enforce that he'll stay in the Ari Miklot.
Yeah, otherwise why should he bother?
Right, I hear that.
He's got him
right. Okay, I hear that. Okay, so what did we just do? We just did the most incredible Rambam, Rabbos. We just did the most incredible Rambam, who says that the whole point, who proves for the fact that the way the Torah teaches us the Isra of Klala is by Cheresh, is to prove to us that the Isra of Klala has nothing to do with a Klala doing anything to anybody. You're not hurting anybody. And the whole point of the Torah is to make sure the midos of the Mekalel are...
to work on your kaas.
Right, yeah. To work on the kaas, exactly. And now we're going to bring a few supports to this. The Or Samech on the Ram is going to, we're going to have mentioned 2 points that will buttress this Mahalach of the Rambam. So the Or Samech on the Rambam. Okay, we don't have to read it because I think we set it out already. He just he articulates the point that we're making clear, that the point of this Rambam is that the issue of Klala has nothing to do with any damage you're causing anybody. You see, by the way, from the Rambam, that what damage does the Klala cause? None. Because if there was any damage that the Klala caused, we would say that the problem with doing a Klala is that you are damaging somebody. But the whole point of this Rambam is to say that the Klala causes no damage. And the only problem is only in the midas of the Mekalel. So you see something great. You see, according to the Rambam, what does a Klala do? A klala is meaningless.
But you can't argue with the Gemara.
How will the Rambam read the Gemara that says you should take it seriously? Right? The Gemara says, "Alti klulas hedit klala beinecha," and the klala of a Talmud Chacham, even Bechinam, we'll have to figure that out at some point.
But it's just a pshat is giving them less kalchesh.
No, but the pshat only works in Lo Sekal Chayesh because there's no damage inflicted. If you would assume that there is damage inflicted, then that should be the issue. You're causing a person damage. The whole point of the Rambam is to say that the victim is not a victim. And still it's Aser Daraisa. It must be that a klala is not effective. Therefore, you could say there's no damage to a victim. Look at the Rambam in Hilchas Sanhedrin. This is a Rambam in the Yad. If you... I'll ask you 2 questions. Could I give you rishus to punch me?
No.
Right? Good Jewish boys, boxers. Could I go into the boxing ring with you and give you rishus to punch me? Please. Okay, let's not get bloody. Could I give you rishus to curse me out? Again, not with 4-letter words, but you could give me, I give you rishus, I'm mochel, lechatila, for you to curse me. What does that work?
Why do you have the right to give rishus?
In which case?
Any
of those guys?
Yes.
It's me. I can do what I want with me. Good Jewish boys don't jostle as knights in armor. Okay, let's see this Rambam. So another question. That was the first question. Second question. After you cursed me, you were mekalel me. After you were mekalel me, it's Erev Yom Kippur, right? It's Erev Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is coming. We know that Adam HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't forgive. There's only one to forgive. You have to forgive. Erev Yom Kippur. You cursed me. You know what? It's Erev Yom Kippur. I'm ochel you. Erev Yom Kippur. I'm ochel you for the curse that you cursed me out. Wait a second. If you curse somebody, you get malchus, right? Yes. So, you know what? Yom Kippur, Erev Yom Kippur comes, and I'm ochel you. Are you going to give the guy malchus anymore?
Absolutely. That was the Rambam just
said. Let's see. Let's see the Rambam in Hilchas Sanhedrin. That was a Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. That's Hashkafa. Let's learn some Rambam now. Says the Rambam in Hilchas Sanhedrin, source number 8. Afalpi, sheyesh lulad. We learned, by the way, the first or second source. The first source in our shir was that you're not allowed to curse specifically a dayan and a nasi. So says Rambam, afalpi sheyesh lulad dayan or the nasi limchol al kvodo. It is true that a dayan or a nasi has the right to be mochel on his cover. That's Gemara and Kedushin. Ein ol yachol limchos al kilula. So he's not allowed to be mochel if he was cursed. V'chein she'ar ha'am, afalpi she'mochel. Even though the victim of the klala is mochel, nevertheless we give malchus. Malchus hamikalel. Why? Because he sinned. Even though the recipient. Yeah, I don't know why. That's figure out. You have to look at the sugya to get the answer to that. Yeah. Says the Or Sameach, a beautiful insight. Beautiful insight. Says the Or Sameach, how did the Rambam know that if a Nasi, if any person is mochel after the klala happened, we still give the guy malchus? Says the Or Sameach, because in the same way that there's a halacha that I omitted, the Rambam says also, you're not allowed to curse yourself. You're not allowed to curse yourself. Some people are just really bad, right, Dr. Shapira? Other people have really bad, they wanna hurt themselves, they wanna curse themselves. There are people like that? Who wanna bring bad things on themselves? Are there such people? Who are ill? Are there people who wanna hurt themselves and curse themselves?
Yes.
There are such people. What do we call them?
Masochists.
There we go. Thank you. Masochists. So if you have a masochist, are you allowed to curse yourself? Let's ask it in a better way. If you're a masochist, then you curse yourself. We'll give you malchus? Says the Rambam, yes, we'll give you malchus. Who do you curse? Yourself. Says the Or Sameach. That's the prime case of a guy who's mocha. Right? You're doing it to yourself. That means you're mocha. You wouldn't do it if you weren't mocha yourself. So you're mocha yourself to do it. And we still give you malchus. Says the Or Sameach, it must be so. So what do you see from that? That even when somebody's mocha, even when somebody's mocha, we still give malchus. Why is that? Why is that? Look at this beautiful Or Sameach in source number 9. Pasha, the reason why you could, why the Rambam said in Sanhedrin that a person can't be mochel, is dilogarmi mekal atzmo. You can't give yourself a malkah, a klala. You're mochel for yourself so that you could curse yourself, and yet we still give you malkas. Certainly, you can't be mochel somebody else cursing you. Why? You're mochel. Why should we still lash the guy? Well, if yimasha be a rabbein of the sefer hamitzvahs, tahachet mitzad. Ha Mikalel. The Avera was what? That somebody was hurt, damaged, victimized? No, that's not the Avera. The Avera is that you had bad midas and you uttered a word of curse. You wanted a revenge, you had kaas.
So
you wanted to get back at somebody.
You can add that to the Me'uvas Lo Yavo Lishkom list.
Once you do something wrong, okay, yes. Yeah, once you do something wrong, it's over. Lachain lomol mechila, because when does mechila apply? If you hurt me, then I can be mechil you. But the avera that you did has nothing to do with hurting me. It's objectively something bad. You hurt. Forget about me. You did something wrong, so that's what we give you malchus for, because you had those bad midos, because you had the kaas, you had the avenging attitude, personality, that sick avenging personality that the doctor was telling us about. That's why we give the person malchus. That's the beautiful pshat that Or Sameach says. That's the secret behind why in halacha you can't be mochel a klala, because the isser in klala is not the fact that the victim was hurt, but rather the fact that the mikalel demonstrated a bad mita. Beautiful Or Sameach based on this beautiful Rambam. We're not even halfway done with the sugya. Maybe we'll finish it next week. I want to add something that follows along this line of thinking. What we have seen from this Rambam, it seems clear, is that what is the effectiveness of a klala? Zero. Klalas don't work. That's what the Rambam seems to be holding. All these gemaras notwithstanding, we'll have to figure them out, but it sounds from the Rambam that he's assuming that a klala doesn't do anything, because if it did, then you'll always be held liable because you hurt somebody. The fact that the Rambam has to say, you didn't hurt anybody at all, it's just you had bad midos, shows that you didn't hurt anybody. That means the Rambam is assuming that a klala isn't effective.
Is that like the Rambam Shittosa? It doesn't really
believe
it's supernatural.
We'll see some things later that you could probably assume the Rambam would not like. So I would say you're probably right, although it's not explicit.
But in order to the parches and the Avram say halacha,
a lot of things. And we're going to see something that's even more explicit, not about the Ram, but a Ramban, a Rashba. I'm sorry, that's a little more explicit. Yeah, you're probably right. So the Igros Moshe was asked Number 10, the bottom of top of page 3. So the Rambam we mentioned talked about if you curse me and then I forgive you for having cursed me. The Rav Moshe wants to ask, I raised the question, could I let you curse me? I jumped out. I said it was the Rambam, it wasn't really the Rambam. The only one said, if you were cursed, could a person be mochel it? Here the Rav Moshe asked, could I let you curse me? So Rav Moshe in the top of page 3 says you can't give somebody rishus. The same way you can't let somebody punch you in the face, you can't let somebody punch you, you also can't let somebody curse you. And then he wants to suggest his Davar Chadash in the first underlined line on page 3. That there are two different mitzvahs in the Torah. There aren't really. There's really one, but in Rav Moshe's eyes, we could separate them into two. The Mekalel Atzma, we said that there's an Issur D'oraisa for you to curse yourself. And there's also Mekalel Chavero, that's also an Issur D'oraisa, you can't curse your fellow. Heim Shnei Inyanim and Yoni Isurim. They're two separate types of Isurim. Why? And he says that maybe they're from even different pasuk. Mekalel Atzma, that's from one pasuk. Why is that? He says something interesting. The first word, about the 7th or 8th line down on the page. Shapashtus Perusho, when you curse yourself, what's happening? Humachmas, why is it also when you curse yourself? It's because when you curse yourself, you're being punished, because if you curse yourself, you could bring bad things onto yourself. Not like what we've been saying until now. When you curse yourself, you're punished because you're hurting yourself. You're doing something masochistic. And therefore, you're going to be punished. You're going to be held accountable. You're going to get malchus because you hurt yourself. Ava, look at the underlined line, the second set of underlined lines. Ava b'mekal chevur chaveiro, eno mitzad hachshash t'shema t'kuyam klol laso. The reason why you can't curse your fellow Jew is not because we're worried, oh, something will, it will be fulfilled and you actually hurt somebody else. Why? Why will a klal, he is about to bring a beautiful proof why a klal can't work. Because it's asur d'oraisa to curse somebody. How could it be that you do an asur d'oraisa and Hashem will, as you do your asur d'oraisa, Hashem will follow through with what you just did. Hashem says, don't do this. You go ahead, don't curse somebody. You go ahead and curse the living daylights out of your friend, and Hashem's now going to fulfill that curse that you said, that Hashem said, don't say. Let's look at that inside. We're not worried. It's not aser to curse somebody else because Hashem might, it might happen. It might hurt somebody. Devada in bold print. Devada lo yachushu b'shamayim l'kulal also. In Shamayim, they're not going to give a hoot about that klala. Shari osa isr b'zeh. When you curse somebody, you're violating isr d'oraisa. You think Hashem is now going to listen and follow and like do what you say to do when...
Unless you're not.
That gets into the
Mahani. Yeah, it does. You're right, it does. Ubarur, it's clear, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, Shelo yavam izah shum ra l'chaver. Nothing bad is going to come to your friend. So then what's the problem? So he has a little... if we stopped here, the Rambam would say, so what's the problem? The problem is that you have ben mitos. He says with a twist. El sha'isr hu mitzad habizayon shemevazel l'chaveru. Oh, a new twist. The Isser of Klala is not, he's not talking about the Ben Midos, but rather the fact that you were Mevaza, a fellow Jew. It's not going to work. It's not going to be effective. You don't have to worry about it. They could say, I hope you die, I hope you this, I hope you that. It's not going to work. But when you say that to somebody, to their face, that's shaming them, that's embarrassing them. That's going to be what the Isser is. So again, you see, not exactly like the Rambam, but the way Rav Moshe is going, again, there are other Rishonim, which we didn't see yet, we'll maybe see next week, but he's going with the idea that a curse isn't going to do anything. And he's just bringing a brilliant reason why. You did an Isser by cursing. Hashem's going to listen to that? When he said, don't do it? That's what Moshe says.
So what if you call him not in front of his face, but in privately? That'd be okay.
I hear what you're suggesting. I hear what you're saying.
It's very strange.
What we have to do next week, Be'ezus Hashem, is talk about a whole other area, getting more into the topic of Bilam, which is Bilam's ability to curse, because we have Gemaras, the Gemara that you might be familiar with, which we'll start with next week, Brachas Dav Zayin, right? That Bilam cursed Bnei Yisrael at the right moment. He knew the exact moment when. So the question is, if we're saying now, everything that we just said is that cursing doesn't really do anything. So we say that a Jewish cursing doesn't do anything to another Jew. The Rambam said it, Rav Moshe Feinstein said it. So what's the big deal about Bilam? What did he do? A Jew doesn't have a power to curse, but Bilam does.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.